Welcome to this week's episode of the CDH Radio Show. I'm your host, Dawn Ireland, President of CDH International, and this week we are talking with the family of Reagan Galagos. Her parents, Zach and Shelby, are currently with her in the hospital. Let's hear a little bit about their journey.
Can you introduce yourselves and tell us how you first heard the words congenital diaphragmatic hernia?
So I'm Zach Gallegos.
I'm Shelby Gallegos.
And we first heard about CDH through Reagan, our daughter. We were pregnant at the time and going through, 20th week?
Yeah.
We were going through our normal appointments and everything, and they did an ultrasound on her and then sent us back to get another second ultrasound because they told us that they couldn't see everything that they wanted to see. Found out later that the reason we went back to the second ultrasound was because she had a hole in her diaphragm. And then that's when we started Googling hole in diaphragm and CDH and everything. And, it started going down the rabbit hole of everything that CDH is because neither of us had heard about it or anything like that. They referred us up here to Johns Hopkins because the hospital in our local county was not equipped to deal with something of this magnitude. So they sent us up here to Johns Hopkins to do an ultrasound again, just to make sure that everything was what they said it was, or if it was something that they just missed and it looked out of whack. Unfortunately, they did find that it is CDH, and since then we've been just pushing through with everything.
Was this your first baby?
Yes. Yes, Reagan is our first.
So how did you prepare for the birth? I mean, how were the doctor's appointments, and did you decorate a nursery, and do you have local support? So how did you just process all that information while preparing for your first baby?
So the biggest gut punch with it all was we actually came up here to Johns Hopkins on our second wedding anniversary, and that's the day that we found out. And due to, at the time, COVID restrictions, only Shelby was allowed into the hospital to do all the procedures, whereas I sat outside, luckily with her mother and my father were with me while we were sitting outside for, I believe it was a 6-hour day that I was sitting outside, and she was in there by herself. We're finding all this out. I'm on speakerphone and Skype with her to talk to the doctors and trying to get any information I can. And of course, we're in the city of Baltimore where, it's just noise 24/7, and trying to listen over a Skype call to hear about, what's going on with my daughter. It was tough. But our biggest support group, of course, has been our family this entire time. We also belong to a church in St. Charles. And that aside from our family, they are the biggest support that we've had this entire time. And we've leaned on them and their prayers, and we've created the Rally for Reagan Facebook group and Instagram page for, everyone to be able to follow along, because everyone wanted updates constantly. So we've had people that we have never even met before who don't even know our families who have joined into that group just to share their stories and give us a lot of heartfelt wishes and everything. And and you guys too. We linked up with you guys, and it spread even further. We, because of your organization, we linked up with a couple out in Utah, and we talk with them constantly. They're about the same age group as us and their first child as well. And we just message back and forth and give each other strength and hope the entire time. Those have been our biggest supporters this entire time.
That's great.
If I can add on to that with the preparation, we went through the FIDO procedure. So, and I'm sorry, I can't spell it out off the top of my head what exactly FIDO stands for, but basically the balloon that went in the trachea for Reagan to push all of her organs back down and give her lungs time to grow. So with that, we spent like 3 days a week in the hospital. I had a lot of like preterm contractions because with the procedure, it was hard to make sure she was going to stay in until term. So we were at the hospital mostly all the time, and we ended up moving to Baltimore to be within 30 minutes of the hospital for the procedure.
St. Charles, I'm from St. Mary's County, so I'm fairly familiar with the area. St. Charles.
We are too, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, well, we'll have another discussion on that. St. Charles, that's 2 hours from Baltimore?
Yes. Yeah, it's up in Charles County area, or in Charles County in Waldorf.
Okay. Wow.
And her father's a pastor at a church there, so that's our church that we belong to, that you know, that she's belonged to her whole life, and you know, I belong to after we got married.
That's good support to have, that foundation of people who know you and go on this journey with you. That's always so incredibly important. Now, what week were you when you had the feto done?
I was 30 weeks when we got the balloon inserted and 34 when they took it out.
Okay. And you said you had preterm labor, so did you have to go on bed rest, or how did they deal with that?
They never actually required me to go on bed rest. It just turned into we would have like 3 appointments per week for follow-up, and I would have the NSTs done, the non-stress test where they put the thing on your belly to track contractions, and every single time I went in, I was having contractions. I didn't know. I didn't feel them. So we would be admitted for like 3 or 4 days at a time, just a lot of magnesium sulfate to hopefully stop them, and luckily it always did, and I made it just barely the full term. So
that's great for Fido. That's great. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. You are the first couple that we have interviewed who has gone through this during the pandemic. So I know when we air this, people are going to be asking questions, because your experience is not going to be the same as people before 2020. You know, a lot of parents who undergo feto, they're just automatically admitted. But given that there's COVID and, you know, all of the issues with worry of infection inside the hospital, it makes sense that they didn't let you stay in there. And to have to go back and forth without your spouse, that's heartbreaking. I'm really sorry you guys have gone through any of this. It's the worst possible time to go through any of this. I mean, that's just, wow.
Well, we were lucky enough that, I mean, all of the procedures leading up to the actual insertion of the balloon, I was not able to go in with her. I sat in the parking garage outside. But once, you know, when she got the balloon put in, I was actually allowed in the hospital with her. I stayed with her the couple of days that she was in. I actually was in the OR when they inserted it. I actually got to watch the entire procedure, and it was actually something amazing to watch, the way how technology and how our medical field has come in so many, you know, over the years. It's just amazing. Of course, you know, we also had a big speed bump with hers. Was they kept on checking Reagan on sonograms leading up to it. And they kept telling us, oh, she's in the perfect position. This procedure will take like 15 minutes maximum, and that includes cleanup and everything. It took 2 hours because she decided that she wanted to float around in all the fluid. And then as soon as they finally got the balloon in and they checked her, they looked at the sonogram, she was in the exact position they wanted her to be at the start.
Wow.
And I knew from that point on that my little sassy girl is going to give me a lot of hard times ahead.
That's okay. That stubborn, strong sassiness is proven to her benefit so far. So that's great. That's wonderful.
Yes, definitely.
So you made it to 40 weeks, and was the birth planned? Did you have a set date? Did you go in for a C-section, or what happened?
We actually only made it to 37. And yeah, on December 22nd, and it was her water had broken at about 5:30 in the morning. I'm still currently working at my job site 2 hours away, and I had just arrived at my work and texted her that I had, you know, made it to work, and she calls me. I was like, I need you to come back home. So I had to come rushing back home because her water broke. And, you know, they got an ambulance to take her up there to make sure everything was just, she got there as quick as possible. And then Reagan was born the following day at about 1:30 in the afternoon.
They were planning to induce me, but we didn't make it that far. So
with Fido, a lot of the people who are viewing don't know what that is or what it involves. And you explained, you know, the plug and everything. But when you give birth, do they allow you to have vaginal delivery or do they require cesarean delivery?
They prefer vaginal if they can make it happen. But unfortunately with Fido, there's a lot of emergencies. So sometimes C-section is what has to be. I almost had to get a C-section because I wasn't moving along quickly enough for their liking. And they just wanted to make sure Reagan was safe as possible. So they gave me a few hours and I ended up getting to where I needed to be. So I was able to have it, a vaginal delivery. And they really thought C-section was going to be the plan. And for a lot of moms, I think it is. But
okay. So tell us what happened with Reagan at birth. What, how was she? How was the actual birth? What were the procedures they do with the Fido baby after birth? Or
so with her, and I know it's going to differ from baby to baby. If you talk to some other CDH parents, you know, they said that they were able to cut the cord and everything. I was unable to cut the umbilical cord, and they were apologizing to me. I said, no, do whatever you got to do. Like, you know, would I love to? Yes. But my first priority is the daughter. So when she came out, they immediately cut the cord. They already had the NICU staff in there waiting and ready. And they got her intubated relatively quickly. They let me come over and touch her and I put my finger on her hand and she, you know, squeezed my finger so tight. And then, you know, I took a couple pictures and then I backed out of the way. They put her in an incubator and, you know, let Shelby see her before they rolled her out to the NICU. They checked her out for a couple hours just to make sure everything was good. And then they let us go back, later on that night to go see her. There wasn't really too much involved. Like I said, otherwise they just taking her away from us, as soon as possible. We didn't get the normal birth where the mom gets to hold her immediately, do the skin to skin. And, that was probably one of the harder things, but we knew that what they were doing was what she needed. And that was our main priority.
Now, how long was it until you were able to see her?
For me, it was only a couple hours. They, like I said, they had to just check on her and make sure, you know, all her vital signs look good and everything. And then, Shelby was able to go see her a little later because she still had to do a little bit of recovery.
It was the next morning they let me go back.
Right. Okay. So it wasn't too much longer after that we were able to go and see her and going back and seeing her, she was already like chill. She was wiggling around a little bit, like already showing that she was going to fight through this the entire time. And I mean, she's actually been doing that since she was in the womb. Like every time they were trying to get sonograms and everything of her, she's kicking, she's punching. And I keep on joking with all the nurses up here that I'm going to make her a little MMA fighter or something because it's her strength. She just can't stop. She's already caught me in the jaw a couple times with a mean right hook. And it's just like, it's one of those things you look at her and you can't even be mad. It's just, you're such a proud parent at that point.
That's wonderful. She sounds pretty amazing. Okay, so how did the next few weeks go? How long before surgery and what type of repair and any complications or anything?
I'm sorry, the connection's cutting out. I'm sorry, yeah. The connection cut out a little bit.
It's I don't know, it's being pretty unstable at the moment. Let's see. So I'll ask that again. I'll edit that out. Tell me about those first few weeks. When did she have a repair? How did she do on the ventilator? Was she ever on ECMO or there complications?
Well, she was born on a Wednesday and her repair was that following Sunday. She never had to get ECMO, which we're so thankful for. And we actually believe that the fetal procedure helped to prevent a lot of extra necessities. With her repair procedure, it was actually a very interesting day. She was supposed to be first thing in the morning and she got bumped back until about like 1 o'clock in the afternoon because they had an emergency surgery that had to be done beforehand, which made us, you know, have an even longer day of, you know, heart in our stomachs. Our stomachs were tightened as tight as they could be, but everything, like the Johns Hopkins is amazing. They were sending us updates throughout the entire thing. They let us know when she was put under sedation. They let us know when they were starting the procedure. They let us know that they were halfway through, let us know, and, you know, all the way up to she's being wheeled back to her room. So we were getting updates the entire time. It wasn't too much wondering what's going on. The nurses were able to pop in every now and then and say, hey, she's doing good. They're liking what they're seeing. And it was just amazing. It was definitely a huge stress relief. And then, you know, there was with Johns Hopkins, and I'm not sure with other hospitals, but they have the NICU and then the PICU. Typically CDH babies end up in the PICU after the repair surgery. And they told us that she could possibly go down there. If there's no complications, they'll bring her back in the NICU. And they brought her back to the NICU. And that's where we were up until this past couple of weeks. Now that she's battling a pulmonary hypertension, they sent her down to the PICU. They're more equipped with it. But yeah, so, and a lot of them are actually pretty surprised that they're just now meeting her at, you know, she's 3 months old today. And they're surprised that, you know, they have not seen her once in the PICU because normally CDH babies end up down there.
So 3 months today. And so right now, as you just mentioned, she's had issues with pulmonary hypertension the past few weeks. So tell us what the past few months have been like. I mean, that's a long time to be in the hospital.
Major roller coaster ride, and neither of us are really fond of roller coasters to begin with. So, yeah, she's definitely one of the, you know, and we firmly believe that Reagan's controlling us. We don't believe the doctors and nurses are. We know that Reagan's taking it every step of the way. The first couple months were actually, you know, they were, you know, stressful, but a little more stress-free than what we're dealing with right now. While she was in the NICU, she developed a lot of love from the NICU team. Like, they would all pop their heads in and say how cute she is. Like, even if they've never even had her as one of the nurses or doctors, they just pop in just to look at her because, you know, they think she's so adorable. And then, but, you know, she was progressing really well. She came off the chest tube within the first week. You know, by New Year's, she had it out. Then she developed a staph infection, so they had to intubate her again, but it was only for a short time. She got it back out again, and we were able to hold her relatively quickly. They were feeding her quickly, and she looked like she was progressing well. Their treatment ended up being a lot of the time was just trying to get us home. So they were working on increasing her feeds, helping her with her withdrawal from fentanyl and everything, and trying to wean her oxygen down, you know, and they're telling us that, you know, she can go home with an NG tube, she can go home with oxygen, you know, that's no big issue. And then just a couple weeks ago, she got hit with a huge pulmonary hypertension crisis. You know, they started seeing her prime nurse, who has been fantastic this entire time, and even though she's not her nurse anymore, she still comes down and visits Reagan like she's her own daughter. She was just sitting there watching her, and she's like, no, that's not Reagan. Like, something's not right. And they quickly were able to get her intubated again. They put her on nitric, which helped her and, you know, put her back in the right direction. Then we got transferred down to the PICU, which is, for any parents that know, the PICU is a whole different environment from a NICU, because you have kids of all ages, and it's a little more intimidating than a NICU. And so we moved down there all stressed out, and for a couple of days she was able to get off the nitric because she was doing well. And then just last week she had another pulmonary hypertension crisis. where they had to continually bag her to bring her oxygen levels back up, put her back on nitric, and now they're working hard to try and get her off of everything again. She's doing well right now. But she's also, on top of the CDH, she's battling CHD as well. And she has a VSD and an ASD. And they, for the last month, the cardiology team was trying to figure out, should they go ahead and try and repair the VSD as well right now, or will it close on its own? Because the pulmonary hypertension and the VSD kind of balance each other out. So if they fix one, the other could get worse. So that was their biggest concern. And unfortunately, you know, it took so long. And we firmly believe that Reagan was finally like, nope, I got this. I'm putting us back on the right track. We're going to go after the pH first. And it seems to be the right route. Like, she knew what she needed and she got it and got her back on the right track.
Wow. Yeah, that is definitely a roller coaster ride. And NICU is a completely different environment than the NICU. It really is. And it's hard because you get used to the nurses and the other staff in one place and the other families, and you build up these bonds, and then suddenly you're in a whole different world. It's on top of everything else you're going through. Well, I hope you get back to the NICU soon. No offense to the wonderful people in the
Yeah, and even the PICU staff, they sit there, they're like, we take no offense because we understand, like, all the parents say the same thing. They get down there and they just look at them and like, when are we going back to the NICU? Because it definitely is. It's a whole different environment, especially, you know, when you hear in the NICU, you only have babies. So you hear babies crying, it could be just hunger, you know, them being, you know, them just being babies. Whereas, you know, down in the PICU, you have a you know, 5-year-old child, they're usually crying because, you know, they're scared, they're in pain or something like that. And it hurts a lot more when you're hearing all that. And of course, even our first day back down there, there was a code and we're seeing doctors going running. And it's just, you know, that added to our stress level so much.
Yeah. My son was never in the NICU. We never had the cute baby environment. We were always in PICU, and that was a definite shock. The first time I walked in the PICU to see him, there was a code within an hour. And that is, I think the average person who's never had a sick child has no idea how traumatizing it is to walk into something that looks like a unit from MASH, where there's just beds everywhere and trauma everywhere and everything is highly emotional and stressful, and you absorb all that energy on top of your own worry. And I really don't think that the public has any clue how hard that is on parents in the hospital. It's a really scary thing. Maybe we're gonna have to do like a whole shot of that. Well, we can't do a shot of that because we're not allowed to do that. But I wish we could just explain. Maybe I can talk one of the hospitals into using their footage or something to explain on one of our telethons exactly what families see, because mostly on our telethons and on our page, they see one view, and that is CDH baby. That in itself is traumatizing because these children are going through so much, but they don't see everything else, the 360 view of what you're going through. And the alarms, and then, you know, trying to get some sleep in a chair beside the bed because you haven't slept all night because you've driven or you wanted to stay at the hospital, or just, there are just so many more aspects of, oh, my child's in the hospital and sick. And, you know, it's just, it's your entire life is completely different.
Right.
And I so appreciate you all, both of you coming on here and sharing when your daughter's still in the hospital. And so give us how she is today, if you don't mind.
She's doing really well. She's definitely progressing well right now. From their rounds today, they're talking about trying to get her weaned off of her ventilation and everything. So like I said, she's back on the nitric. So I think they're trying to kick that to the curb here soon, as well as trying to get her extubated again. Because she is definitely not fond of the breathing tube. There have been, when she was in the NICU, there have been plenty of times where even her, you know, cannula, she would just hold on to the the thing as if she wants to pull it out. She's pulled her NG tube out plenty of times. She'll just get her hands up on her. She's just not all of that. But she's doing really well. They have her off of a bunch of sedation medications. They had her paralyzed for a while just so that way they can control her lungs and let her lungs rest. But she's completely off of that now. Now it's just kind of just letting the treatment run its course and, you know, get her off all the machines as quick as possible.
Yeah, I'm assuming, but tell me if I'm wrong, you both have had a chance to hold her by now, I hope.
Yes, multiple times. When she was still in the NICU before this whole crisis, I believe for about a month and a half, we were able to hold her. We were changing her diapers. We were actually in the NICU. We were helping the nurses out with the care so much so that they'd just walk in, they'd see us, and like, okay, so you know where this button is, this, you guys got this, right? And like, just message me if you need anything. You know, they definitely appreciated it because they knew it was one less child that they had to worry about up there, because up here, the NICU has been getting full so quick, and you know, kids leaving quick, and as soon as they get kids better, more kids flood in, and it's been a lot of COVID babies coming through, or quarantine really? Babies, I could say, yeah.
Wow, that's surprising. Yeah. Because you know, we don't normally think of children getting COVID so badly.
Oh no, I'm sorry. They don't have COVID, but the you know they were.
Conceived and born during COVID.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That's what we've kind of joked about. They're quarantine babies.
Yeah, it's about that time, so, isn't it?
Yeah, babies. And they knew they'd start seeing an influx and everything of because a lot of what they have are preemies. But I mean, a lot of them too. Like if they had parents trying to come up and you know have a planned stay in the NICU, they have to turn them away because they had to make sure they had beds available for families who were, you know, preemies came in. So it's been tough on them too, but you know, they've never let it get to them. And it's amazing what, you know, what they go through day in and day out. And, you know, especially like seeing someone Reagan, and a lot of them who have formed this huge attachment to her. And, you know, like I said, they love her as if she's their daughter. And they're still messaging us and everything and asking us how she's doing. And some of them come down to the PICU to come and, you know, see how she's doing and everything on their way out of their, you know, 14-hour shift. They're stopping in to see her because they love her so much. And they've loved seeing how much she's progressed.
That's really wonderful. I'm really glad to hear you have such a great support at the hospital. Is there any advice you would like to give newly diagnosed parents? Wow, I mean, you guys are 3 months into her being here, and then you had several months of planning ahead of time, and it's really fresh. Anything you wish you had known, you wish you had prepared for, that you would like to tell other parents?
For me, the biggest thing is to make sure you have a support group, to make sure you have faith of any kind. And that's going to be the biggest driver for any parent, not just of CDH, but any parent that, you know, could end up in the NICU. And it's a long road, and it's the thing that's kept me moving is my faith, and definitely my family and my friends. As far as research goes, I got to say, stay off of Google as much as possible. Definitely. I'm one of those people that I use Google to, you know, because I know that Google's not a doctor, but, you know, I like to get a basis of information, and then I stop diving down the rabbit hole. Shelby, on the other hand, will keep on diving and, you know, see worst-case scenarios, and that's definitely not a good thing for a lot of these parents. At one point, Reagan was diagnosed with neck for a short time, and it probably only really lasted like a day or two, and I researched it right away when we found out. And it was just to see like what the symptoms were, how serious it could be. And seeing that it mainly affects preemies, I was like, oh, Reagan will be fine. And she's Googling it as well. And she's, like I said, diving down the rabbit hole, and starts to add a stress level to her that you know, and it's hard to see too. She had walked in that morning. There was an IV in Reagan's head because, you know, that's the easiest spot for them to be able to place one. And if that's something also that's, you're going to see a lot of difficult stuff that, you never thought you'd see in a million years. And like I said, it's the biggest thing is just get a good support group around you. And definitely, to new parents battling with CDH, just definitely reach out to CDH International because they have the biggest support group that I've seen. And they've connected us with so many people to, adults who are CDH survivors, that have told us their journey and, you know, how letting us know how they are currently progressing to other CDH parents who are, you know, letting us know that their child's in their teenage years and they're doing great and they're thriving. And, you know, it constantly gives us hope to see stuff like that, that, you know, it's tough now, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And it's, you know, seeing our daughter being able to grow up and, you know, later on down the road, me walking her down the aisle. That's the thing that keeps driving me forward. And that's what most parents need to, you know, make sure they have with them through this.
Shelby, would you like to add anything?
I think specifically for moms, it's so easy. Like for me, it's so easy to blame myself for certain situations and to get really, really, really depressed. And, you know, you see, like he said, you see so many things that you never wanted to. And I think for a long time, my biggest focus was I miss home. I miss my dogs and I just want her home. I want to go home. And I had to kind of let go of that and just take it day by day and focus on every single day. I think in my head, like what was today's victory, whether it was small or large. And like on the day she was having this PH crisis and, they had to bag her and she was turning blue and her oxygen was dropping. She was having bradycardias. It was scary, but I would come home and my victory would be they got her back up and she was okay. And it's just, it's really hard to get wrapped up and I just want to go home because that means she's better and life is perfect. But I think the more we're there, I realize like this is just going to be a continuous journey for sure. And every single day, it's just what was the victory? And I'll eventually get home to my dogs and my family. But right now, it's just fighting with her and not blaming myself, being strong for her, and just keeping your eye on the goal of that day, I guess. Because my biggest thing was the overall, like, she's better, she's home, this and that, and it just needs to be day by day.
Yeah, it really does. And to one of your comments, there's no reason to blame yourself, really. There's nothing that any of us did that could have possibly caused this, no matter how many times we play back every single thing we've ever done in our entire lives. Been exposed to, drank, ate, you know, where we played as kids, none of that matters. There's nothing we could have possibly done because we don't know what causes CDH. And even if we knew what caused CDH, none of us would purposely, you know, expose ourselves to anything. So that's a hard thing to let go, but you've got to.
I'm getting better. At first, it was definitely constant blame and just I was growing this anger towards myself that wasn't necessary. And logically, I knew I didn't do it. It was just, you know, you always want to know the why. And yeah. I think for Reagan, there's not really a why. It was just a part of God's plan for us. And as a couple, it's made us stronger and it could have completely gone the other way and broken us up, but it's made us stronger. It's made our family stronger. And I think there's a blessing in that itself.
And truly, I mean, for me, I believe that it was for me, it was God's plan before all this. I was not a religious person. I didn't believe, you know, that, you know, God existed. And, you know, as soon as we found out the diagnosis, I started praying. And ever since that point, I felt this comfort over me and it's made me stronger. And, it's brought us closer together. You know, I married into a pastor's family as somebody who doesn't believe and they were never pushy, but, now they love seeing like, you know, what I've become and how strong I've come through faith. And it's just, it's, like I said, I believe this was God's plan and he knew that for me to hit hardest, it had to be a girl. I had to have a daughter and, And it had to be something to push me through to where, you know, I've gotten to many points where I thought I'd hit my breaking point. And I open up the Bible and, you know, I'll read different passages and I'm able to keep on pushing forward. And that's the biggest thing. Also, like up here right now, I hope soon parents will be able to get a support group back up here. Right now, only Shelby and I are allowed to see Reagan. So what's the biggest heartbreak for us right now is our parents are unable to see her and hold her and, you know, kiss her, love on her and everything. And that's the biggest, you know, heartbreak for us. Over 3 months, they still have not been able to see their grandchild. For Shelby, it's their first grandchild. For my parents, it's their third. So for hers, I know it definitely hits a lot harder. You know, it's just something that, like I said, hopefully soon with, you know, COVID restrictions being lifted and everything, we'll be able to get people back in. So we just got to start getting people vaccinated and get us, let our support groups get back in there to help out these parents.
You both are really inspirational. And I know that you have got so many people over at Rally for Reagan who are cheering on and praying for, and myself included. I would love to be able to follow up with you in a couple of months and tack onto this video with a great, you know, shot of you guys coming home. Or already home. I don't want you to have to wait months. Already home and doing, you know, in your home with your dogs and in a normal life. So we'll definitely do a follow up on this video because people are going to watch and going to want to know, you know, how she's doing and what's going on. And so we will definitely do that. So I want to thank you both, and we will definitely touch back with you and update everyone. So thank you.
Thank you, Dawn.
Thank you so much for listening to the story of CDH patient Reagan Galagos. As we present this broadcast to you today, little Reagan is currently in the OR undergoing a heart surgery. She's doing pretty well. She's stable at the moment, but prayers and positive thoughts are absolutely appreciated by the family. If you would like to feature your family on one of the future episodes of CDH Radio, please go to www.cdhi.org/share-your-story. That's www.cdhi.org/share-your-story. We would love to include your family's journey with congenital diaphragmatic hernia on the future radio show broadcast, the CDH telethon, media, our blog, and so much more. Thank you again. I am your host, Dawn Ireland, president of CDH International, wishing you a great week.
This is my fight song. Take back my life.